Let's make today the day you get one step closer to becoming the parent you've always wanted to be and the parent your children deserve. Hi, and welcome to Powerful Parenting for Today's Kids. I am your host, Erin Taylor, and I have wanted to help parents and children literally since I was 11 years old. I created this podcast to help you make a stronger, healthier, deeper connection to your child, to understand the inevitable challenges a little better, and learn some new ways to navigate them when they occur. Thank you for spending some time with me. Now let's get this show started. Hello and welcome back to the show. This is episode 641, and I'm super excited to chat with my new friend, Dr. Angela McIver. Angela is the founder of Trapezium Math, a national math club helping students in grades K through 5 become confident, fearless math learners. Angela completed her PhD at the University of Pennsylvania, where she wrote her doctoral dissertation, Understanding the Numerical Reasoning of Middle School Students. Based on her experiences interviewing hundreds of students across the country from kindergarten to college, Dr. McIver concluded that few students were provided the rigor necessary to develop strong math foundations. Angela founded Monster Math Club in 2009 as an after-school math club. In 2014, the club changed its name to Trapezium Math Club and moved into a commercial space. In 2020, thank you, pandemic, Trapezium Math Club closed its brick and mortar and moved entirely online, continuing to challenge elementary students with activities that move away from the worksheet-driven classroom and ignite the desire to learn math. Welcome, Angela. It's great to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
We spent a lot of time chatting about math before we hit record.
We did.
And I can't wait to revisit some of those topics that we discussed. So I'm very intrigued by the program that you've created because I guess I'll use my son as a case example. I was telling you that he's in college now, but he was always very, very, very strong in math. It came super easily to him. He was always the first one done. And even in first grade, his teacher would have him go to the back of the classroom with three or four students who were really struggling and behind. And he would work with them trying to catch them up while she was helping individual kids who were working on stuff in the classroom. And so math was always super easy to him. Then he comes and encounters calculus as a sophomore in college. And he was stupefied. He called us several times and said, I am not even sure I'm going to pass this class. Mm-hmm. He ended up getting an A and he still has no idea how. But it was so weird. And he started saying, like, I'm just not a math person anymore. Mm-hmm. And I kept thinking, like, this isn't not... No, you don't... spend 18 years as a quote unquote math person. And then suddenly you're just not that way anymore. This is not true. What is happening here? And then you had a perfect explanation for what was going on and why he probably thought that about himself. Can you share that?
Sure. And you know what? That exactly happened to me when I got to high school and was in a really hard math class. And I was like, oh, I guess I'm not a math person because mm-hmm. it was hard. So your son, like so many children, come in and they may be working above grade level, right? They may mm-hmm. be working ahead. So things are very easy for them. So for the first thing they start to internalize is that math should be easy. Like math mm-hmm. is easy, right?
Effortless.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so in the formative years, the years that were the most important for building this kind of desire to do math or this motivation to do math, he was not being challenged at his level, right? Mm-hmm. So so he experienced all of this success and then he's experiencing a class where he clearly was successful, but because mm-hmm. he had not had experienced math being challenging, he attributed it to, you know,
I'm not a math person.
I'm not good at it. And that happens to so many children, And it's because of what happens to them in elementary school. And it happens, you know, many things happen to kids on their math trajectory from, you know, K to 12 and beyond, that are different. The advanced kids, they hit this mark. The kids who struggle really have other issues, but it's all rooted in how we teach math here in America, which is really problematic.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I will add, I didn't mention this to you before we hit record, but I will add, because I just was thinking about it. When my son went to kindergarten, and I wonder what your thoughts are about this. When he went to kindergarten, I had heard about some of the kindergarten teachers, and I heard about this one in particular, and I desperately wished that he would end up in her class. And somehow my wishes were granted and he ended up in her class. She now teaches first grade, but back then she taught kindergarten, and she has a doctorate in math, and math is her life.
Wow.
And I love this woman. She's a terrific, terrific teacher. My daughter was lucky enough to have her. My younger son did not get her. So two of my three got to spend a year with her. And I love this woman. But she, and I thought every kid should be in her class and every parent should be exposed to her. She's just that good. And I remember she was teaching us as parents how to bring math into every part of life. Mm-hmm. She gave me so many ideas about what we could do when we went to the grocery store.
Yeah.
And it never occurred to me that we could look at the prices and the per unit thing and have the kids weigh the vegetables and stuff like that. So I do wonder. And he, in her class, he was like a sponge. He loved learning. He couldn't wait to go to class, school every day. He was so happy. And I wonder, because that was kindergarten, he got such a strong start in math, like so far ahead of the curve. If then, you know, and the rest of his teachers were very good. I loved them all, but they weren't math specific math oriented.
Right.
That wasn't their background. And so I wonder if, like, was it kind of ultimately not, did it not benefit him to have such a strong, I mean, I guess it did because he's strong in math, but like, if you get a strong foundation in kindergarten and then it kind of drops off, is that helpful or not? What do you think about that?
Oh yeah. I'm glad you talked about it. First of all, I want to meet this teacher.
I should introduce you to,
yes.
You would love her.
Sounds like my kind of person. You know, it's so funny because, you know, we're always pushing math club, and I started math club. It started out of my house and it was just kind of a side gig. I already had this consulting business that worked with, you know, middle schools and high schools around math, but I was really looking at the elementary math curriculum and realizing that, our kids aren't going to be where they need to be able to access the most rigorous courses in middle school. Right. So, and I went to the school and the school like kind of rebuffed me and we're like, we're fine. We don't, you know, it's like, no, really, seriously, look at this. They're not going to be where they need to be. So I started this after school math club, and I initially started for third graders, you know, because my daughter was in third grade at the time. And then my son was in first grade. We have found that kids who start math club in kindergarten, you know, who have that kindergarten, just are propelled so much further ahead than all the rest of their, first of all, they're sponges then. They're just taking everything in and there's
and they
so
love it.
Much and they love it. And there's so much you can teach them. So when I run into parents and parents will be like, yeah, I'm thinking about maybe doing math club in third grade. You know, when my kids get to, I'm like, no. Start them in kindergarten. Like we see a tangible difference between children in math club who started in kindergarten and children who started later. You know, we close the gap a bit, but the kids who start in kindergarten I only teach one math club a week, which is a kindergarten class on a Sunday. And these kids, I've had them since last summer. By the end of this year, they're going to be doing math equivalent on the second or third grade level. You know, when they start first grade, they will probably be able to, we could put them in a third grade classroom and they could do it. I've not seen this happen in other grade groups like it does so dramatically in kindergarten. Mm-hmm. And one, I think, is because maybe they haven't had exposure to school, so they're not like indoctrinated, and so you're not trying to undo things. Maybe that's part of it. And then the other part is that they're just sponges. So open for it. So why aren't we taking... Here's a crazy statistic. The average kindergarten classroom spends 5 minutes a day on math. 5 minutes.
Really?
Yeah. They're very hyper-focused on reading. Very focused on reading, which I get, but they don't, and schools really don't start thinking or looking, thinking about math until around third grade, especially if you're public schools and you start getting tested in third grade. So then they're like, oh, we need to really pay attention to math. And so children aren't getting as much math. The other thing is that many, and I taught an elementary math methods course at Penn for a number of years for people getting their master's degree to teach. And what I found is, I would say 90% of elementary teachers are math phobic, have had the same kind of trauma that many of us experienced learning math, right? Learning math growing up. And so they don't really, they'll teach what they have to. They're like, oh, I have to cover this. I will do it. But then I can go on to do my fun reading activities. Mm. My fun art, you know, my fun social studies, all the other things that are fun. Math is like a chore that they need to, you know, a check that they need to check off their list. And that is really impacting what's happening with our children as well.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Hmm. So you started this 2009, right?
Yep.
So do you still have any contact with the kiddos who started way back then?
I do.
How are they doing?
They're doing really well. So, you know, when you first start something, and, you know, I come from academia, so you don't ever make a claim unless you can like prove it.
Right.
10 different ways. And so, you know, I was always like, I think we're onto something. But the first indication that we knew that we were onto something is, you know, my children, it was a lot of the students came from my children's feeder school because our brick and mortar was like in the neighborhood. It was in the same neighborhood as our school. We get kids from all over, but mostly from our feeder school. And I had been going back and forth with our school's administration for years. I would go to the PTA meetings and I would say, this math isn't going to work for our kids. We need to change math program. And they were like, no. So we had a group of kids who started in first grade and went through math club. At the time, we had math club that went through middle school. Now we just focus on elementary school. So they were the first kids who graduated eighth grade from our elementary school. And the majority of kids in our elementary school, we're in a big city, go to this very selective magnet high school. And but the only children who went to this very selective magnet high school from our children's school who tested into the advanced honors math track all went through trapezium math.
Wow.
And so we had that. So I had a parent who came to me a couple months ago and said, listen, I just want you to know their child is a senior now in high school, and he took his AP Calc exam and got the highest score you can get on it. She says, I credit the foundation he got in math for this score that he got. But the thing that I'm really also excited about, I started math club for my daughter. She was in third grade. She was the first one. I sat her down. There's a video on YouTube that you can look where she came to me and said, Mom, I'm going to give you this hard problem to solve. And she started giving me this problem. And I was like, why is it so hard? And she says, no, it's really, really hard. She was in third grade. And I said, wait. And I started videotaping her. I have this big whiteboard wall. And I made her do the problem on the whiteboard wall. And it was just this fairly simple problem. It's an addition problem, but with big numbers. But she was drawing like cubes and rods and squares and all this. You have to do it right. It took her like 8 minutes to solve the problem. And then at the very end, she's like, but at home, you teach me how to stack. And so she stacks the problem and solves it. And I was like, okay, but you got two different answers. And the stacking one is correct, but the other one is wrong. Like, what do you think happened? And she's like, it was just so confusing. So, you know, that made me say, okay,
what I'm taking is over, happening?
Right? I'm taking over math for you. And I started a math club for her and some of her friends. And initially it was this co-ed math. It was some boys and girls, but the boys have a very different way of learning and the girls were like getting shut down. So we separated them and we had an all girls math club that started with the third graders, an all boy math club. And that all girls math club, there's four girls in that math club. They're all in college now. I know three of the four majors. So one, my daughter's doing data science. The second girl is a double major, math and economics. And the third girl is engineering or computer science at Harvard. So I was like, okay, we got this. And those kids did math club from third grade to eighth grade. So wow. They did the whole thing. And our whole thing was like, wow. How do we push kids to do hard math? So they're used to doing hard, struggling with hard problems, being okay with sitting down and trying to grapple, and then how far can we push them? And once you give them that confidence, they come to you. They're like, teach me how to do this. Let's do this, you know, and you just build them. So we're starting to collect the data around the work that we're doing that is, you know, showing that, yeah, we know how to get kids ready to do hard math.
You know, I think the other thing I thought about when you were telling that very awesome story is it reminds me of what you said, the work of Carol Dweck and a growth mindset versus a fixed mindset. I know that's something my son struggles with because things have come so easily to him for his whole life. He's just got to focus on his ability and the outcome. And he doesn't want to put the effort when he's forced to put the effort in to achieve the outcome he wants. It tortures him because he just never really developed that growth mindset. And I think that growth mindset is so valuable to all kinds of learning. And I think particularly math, because like you're describing, if you learn how to wrestle with challenging math problems. And I think the challenge should be appropriate for your level. Cause if you get something that's just gonna, your eyes are just gonna roll back in your head, that's not really gonna help you want more of that. But if it's just a little beyond, and you probably can speak more to this, but it seems to me if it's just a little beyond where you are, then it's just enough to make you go, I think I probably could figure this out. Let me just see what I can do and work with it and ask questions. Is that kind of like,
that is absolutely it. And I, you know, was a former classroom teacher. And one of the things that I found was that, you know, if you're, if you teach elementary school and you teach reading there, you know, there is this roadmap that you can use for kids to see where they are, right? Do they, you know, how are their phonics, their phonemic awareness, their sight word recognition, their fluency, their comprehension? You kind of like, and you give them books that are at their level, right? Kids That's are true. Reading books at their level. I'm like,
and there's
why?
A lot of focus on that.
Right. And there's just this expectation that we're not going to give kids books that are beyond what they can do. We're giving them books that are here where they can kind of push themselves a little bit more, right? I was like, why does that not exist for math? In the average fifth grade math classroom has kids doing math at seven different levels. Seven levels. So a fifth grade elementary math teacher, and they're just teaching one lesson. So, you know, a lot of the time that I have spent just trying to figure out how do you get kids to one, want to do math, two, love doing math, and three, like to stick with it, is creating these leveled math activities. And the idea is that you can teach one lesson and kids pick, they engage at the level that they want. And, you know, for
That's
us.
That's really cool.
Yeah. And we tell because it has to be their independent math level, right? So you can do these problems independently. They give you challenge. You know, they're not easy problems, but you can work through them. And what we found when we do that, kids would often, you know, when we were in person, brick and mortar, kids would come and say, you know, how do I find the diameter, you know, if I'm given the circumference of a circle? And I'm like, if you don't know that, that's not your level. Like we give them all these, you know, try a different level that you can work on. But what I would have a kids come to me before math club and say, we know we're doing this activity today and we need you to teach us how to, we want to do the higher level. So can you teach us this? And if a kid came to me ahead of time, it's like, can you teach me how to do this? I'm like, absolutely. And so, you know, getting kids to one, work at a level that is confidence building for them, but also make them be like, wait, I can do a higher level if I just work a little harder, if I just, you know, look this up. They go home and they try to figure things out. It's flipping how we think about how we teach math.
Interesting. So I have another question for you, and I don't even know how you would gather data on this, but I've always kind of seen people as either math people or mm-hmm. not math people. You know, I mean, think of the SAT. Are you a verbal person or are you a math person?
Right.
Most people are stronger in one or the other. They're not totally equal. Some people are, but do you find, I mean, you shared the example of the four girls that went through initially. And it makes me wonder, were those three girls that you talked about, were they naturally inclined to be quote unquote math people, you know, more left brained?
No, maybe my Harvard girl, yes. But the rest, no, not at all. And here's the funny thing. So my husband and I will not reveal what that SAT score was, but we found out that we had the exact same SAT score.
Wow.
But I had a higher math score than he did, and he had a higher verbal score.
Interesting.
He went on to go into engineering at an Ivy school.
Huh.
And I majored in history because no one ever like recognized that I could do math. It wasn't until upon reflection, I majored in history. Then I picked up economics because it was very mathematical. And I realized, oh, wait, I'm good at this. I can do this. Huh. Right. But it really is the messaging for so many. Like I was a girl. I was an African-American girl. I did not. And, you know, from third grade on, I was in gifted programs with mostly all boys. And never once did anyone say, you're good at math.
Wow.
Math is something you could do. And I feel like had that happened, I would be, you know, I would have had a completely different trajectory. I'm happy where I ended now because I love what I do. But I don't want that to happen to any other girls. I don't want that to happen to any, you know, children who are not traditionally represented. It's, you know, it's in messaging, right?
Mm-hmm. That is so, so true. That's interesting though. So I guess, I mean, when I think about it, it's like, duh, it makes perfect sense, right? You just expose kids to different things and then
right.
The things that are interesting to them and that they realize come a little bit maybe easier to them or that you develop that strength in them.
Right.
Then they're just naturally going to gravitate towards that most likely.
Absolutely. And here's the thing. You can develop that strength in children and the math, you know, you can develop that math strength and skill and ability and they're, you know, in them over and over. And then they will start to see themselves as math people because they will be better than the kids mm-hmm. in their classroom, right? Mm-hmm. So that's another thing that makes them say, oh, I'm a math person because everyone else struggles and I'm, you know.
And I don't, right.
And I do, right? I have learned this. But we have the one wonderful thing about our moving online. You know, we were very technology free. That was our ethos. And if you were to come into our brick and mortar space, we had no tables and chairs. Kids took their shoes off and teachers and put them in the cubby. We sat on the floors. All the walls were whiteboard walls. Like we did like lots of movement kind of game. It was really cool and fun. And so moving online was really, you know, we really had to say, how do we keep what is special yeah. about Math Club in an online space? But one of the things that's really great, one, we only have 4 kids in a club, is that these clubs are recorded and we get to see kids. You know, I get to go back and look at these clubs that are happening. And I was looking at these one clubs and I had a girl in New York City. These are all second graders. A girl in New York City, one in Massachusetts, one in Michigan, and one in Virginia. I was
that's
like,
very cool.
Let's put them together. Those kids, you could tell all of those girls were like on fire. They were going. And so we contacted the parents and we said, we want to make a special math club with your girls. And now we can like push them ahead, right? They don't need to be doing what the other second graders are doing. But that, I was like, oh, we could do that. We could like find these kids, yes. and put them together. We can push them ahead. And, you know, get them ready. I think that when you do that, if you do that all through elementary schools, girls don't think, oh, I can't do math, or I'm not a math person, or that's not for me. It never in my, you know, childhood, teenager occurred to me that I was a math person.
That's never. Fascinating.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. And that is true. I mean, that's one of the benefits that I think has come out of this pandemic, that we are no longer held down by geography. We're exactly. never limited. Let me say limited. Now you can pair kids up, match kids up who are more similar in right. their interests, their skills, abilities, level, what have
right.
you, where you wouldn't have had that opportunity as much if right. it was just this little neighborhood.
Right. That's so true. It's yeah, that's really neat.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
And then these little girls are finding out that they now have friends who are in all these different locations. That's kind of
right.
cool for
right.
a little person. It opens right. their world up a little bit.
It absolutely does. We made this, we have this kit. I don't know if you could, and we made this just, I'll show you because we were going, we had to make this. It's one of the things that the kids get because we realized that kids had no idea. It's a map. It's mm-hmm. a map. And it has all the time zones. We do math stuff with these time zones and everything. But what is really good is that kids have no idea where other kids in the world are. When they started realizing, oh, you're not right where I am. We're like, yeah, plot your map. Let's see where everyone is. And
very cool.
That's really fun. So we created that just for that reason alone.
That's really cool. I love that.
Yeah.
That's really neat. Yeah, there's just so many different opportunities you have by being a virtual club that just wouldn't have existed if you were still a brick and mortar club.
And that I never would have even considered, right?
Right. It never would occur to you.
Right.
Because there's also a certain benefit and pride in being a tech-free
right
experience in our world, because
right.
there's benefit to that too. So
right.
that was good too, but
right.
now there's this different good stuff that's coming out of it.
Right. And we are as tech free as you can get. We send a kit to parents and we say the only tech they need is a Zoom link. This is the kit. It looks like this. If you
can, oh, very cool. Zoom.
Anyway, it's a big kit. And so you know, that was our thing. Like, we are still tech free, mm-hmm. except for the Zoom link, and everything the kids do is hands-on, you know, work.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
That's really, really cool. So where do you hope to take this Trapezium Math Club into the future? Like, what's your vision?
So we are so scalable now, right? When we were a brick and mortar, I was just a small business and I was actually really happy with, you know, our business. So, you know, you can only fit so many kids in the space. And we were just a known quantity by that time because we would do these big events for kids, like the Monster Mathathon, which was like an amazing race for that kids did around the city. And we would put on a big play every year where the kids shared their math magic skills. And so that was really wonderful, but it wasn't anything that was scalable. We mm-hmm. only reached, you know, maybe we had 100 kids usually per term. And now we can reach so many. But the other piece that we're realizing, so, you know, we would love to have, we currently have kids from 18 states participating in Math Club. I'd love to have all 50 states. But the bigger thing that I would love to see happen is that we now have a mechanism to engage parents in really helping their kids do math in ways that they're like, I can do that. Just like everything that you told me that your first grade teachers told you to do is what we tell parents to do, you know, themselves. But with our kits, we, you know, at the end of Math Club, we always like bring parents on for the last 5 minutes and say, okay, this is what you can do with your child this week. And it's really simple. It's easy. And parents don't have to know, they don't have to understand what is happening. Because, you know, I can see how parents like, I don't want to even touch the math the kids are doing at school. It's just ridiculous. And we tell parents, you don't have to. There's so much you can do from the kit that your kids would love. You could do it at the dinner table. And there are all of these like games and fun activities. So really, my goal is to kind of empower parents to take over math education. And one thing I would tell my kids this all the time, I was like, I don't look at your math in school, in elementary school. It would make me crazy. And I have a PhD. I study this and it would drive me crazy. So I would say, I'm not doing that math. You do whatever the teacher asks you to do. I'm not doing it. You'll do mommy math with me at home. And I did our math, and all three of my children are have been advanced through high school, you know, and not struggling and being able to, you know, having this growth mindset around math and understanding that math, you know, and I want to empower parents to do that. There was a study that found that parents would rather talk to their kids about sex and drugs than help them with their math homework.
I'm not surprised.
I know. It's so hard. And so, you know, we love working with kids. We love working, but, you know, parents can add fuel to that, you know, that learning during the week in ways that is not, it's not hard. It's joyful. We always say joyful, confidence building math. And I want it to be joyful and confidence building for the kid and for the parent as well. So, yeah, I would love that. Take
that
over the world.
Very cool. Yeah, that would be very cool. I love that idea too. Well, I hope that this podcast and our conversation reaches a lot of parents of K through fifth graders who say, oh my goodness, I need this and want this for my child.
I would love that. And we have, parents can try out Math Club before they even register or buy. We do these sessions where they can sign up their kid. They can just try it out and see if they like it. And if they do, they can register. We would love to have that.
So where can they find out more information about Math Club, your Math Club, and then try out one of those trial classes?
Absolutely. On our website, trapeziummath.com. So trapeziummath, all one word, .com. And there's, you can sign your kid up. You can talk to a club leader who can, you know, talk about classes with you, anything, to see if it's right for your child. We reach every level. This isn't for kids. This is for any elementary age kid. We'll take you where you are. Kids who are struggling, kids who are like flying and need to be challenged, and everyone in between.
That sounds really awesome. I'm so excited that you're doing this, and I think it's great. I think it's going to benefit kids everywhere.
Thank you.
And I'm excited that it, I'm hoping that it helps break that stereotype of girls not being math people.
Right.
So I hope that, you know, it really opens, broadens the horizon for a lot of kids who might not have previously thought of themselves as math kids.
Absolutely. That would be my ultimate dream.
That's a good dream to have, and I will hold it with you.
Thank you.
So thank you so much for your time today, Angela. I love what you're doing. I hope lots of parents will come and check out your math club, because I think it's a great resource for young kids in K through five.
Thank you so much.
All right, that wraps up today's episode. Wherever you are in this world, I hope you make it a very calculating day for yourself. That wraps up this episode of Powerful Parenting for Today's Kids. If you know anyone who could benefit from this episode or this podcast in general, please share it with them. Also, I always love hearing feedback from my listeners. I welcome you to send me an email to erin@erin-taylor.com if you have any comments or questions that come up for you in an episode. Our children are our future. Parenting them is the most sacred task we will ever be asked to do. It truly does take a village to raise a child. Let's help each other to raise our children to be who it is they are meant to be. If at any point you feel like you need a little extra help and support, reach out to me. I am here to help you.